It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
And welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast. Here we are once again, middle of the working week, a Wednesday, March the 6th. And of course, we're here 7 days a week. You can hear us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, also Apple Podcasts and Amazon. Well, Domain the other day came out with some pretty interesting news around home ownership. The average household income of home buyers has surged to $220,000, marking a nearly 40% increase in just over 4 years. This sharp rise, revealed by Jarden analysis of Commonwealth Bank data, really does underscore a concerning trend, and that is a decline in the share of home buyers with median or below incomes from 30% to 18%. And this shift really does suggest a widening gap in the housing affordability, with affluent buyers dominating the market. Larger deposits, of course, and reliance on family wealth further accentuate this trend. So the dream of home ownership, as a result, is becoming almost elusive for average income earners, raising pressure questions about social equity and economic opportunities. How are you finding all of that in your property landscape? So with all of that said, this morning we are catching up with somebody who is constantly looking at the numbers for his clients and trying to make sense of it all, and that is Clinton Waters from Axton Finance is here. He's the principal mortgage broker. And good morning, Clinton. Are you keeping busy and keeping pace of this ever-evolving real estate market?
Yeah, good morning, Craig, and thanks very much for having us. We're really seeing a bit of a change in sentiment since the start of the year, so it's been much different than 12 months ago.
Certainly not boring, that is for sure. What does the significance of this increase in the average household income of home buyers that I mentioned signify about the current state of the housing market compared to 4 years ago?
Yeah, look, I think that the data is a telling sign of what has been expected in the marketplace more broadly. And it's really becoming an evolution of what I see and what we say within our practice is a two-speed economy. Those on higher incomes are obviously in a better position to meet the current affordability and servicing requirements. Just 12, 18 months ago, before these interest rate cycles were increasing, the income multiple for loan affordability was much higher and the debt sensitization was lower. What we've got now is that banks start to cringe a little if your debt-to-income ratio presses above 5 times your gross household income. Whereas before, that was 6s, even 7s quite comfortably, and the debt sensitization, where rates were being stress-tested for borrowers, was sitting, around about that 5.5% mark. Now it's at 9. So you add those two things in, and you get a real, knock-on effect of affordability for those on lower household incomes.
Yeah, that's quite significant. And regarding your own observations, coming back to this 200 grand, what proportion of home loan applicants now earn more than $200,000?
Look, it's anecdotal in terms of what, my opinion of that would be. At Axton Finance, we deal with a fairly time poor, professional type client. So generally that comes with higher incomes and of course complexity. But I would say across the board, it's interesting that the median household income now is circa about, wage, I should say, is around about 90,000 taxable a year. And that's really sort of struck me when I was taking more notice of this in the last 12 months. Analysis of saying that you need a household income of a greater than $220,000 is quite an extreme figure. And that's pressing some people into the resignation, particularly younger buyers and those trying to enter into the market, into the resignation of like, I just can't do this. However, there are multiple pathways of getting an outcome, and it just doesn't necessarily need to be, I'm going to buy the standalone house on a block of land in the suburb I grew up in. So we are seeing some creativeness around how these younger buyers are being pressed by affordability, looking outside of the box of, perhaps buying with friends. Of course, there's the bank of mum and dad, there's the family pledge options, looking at more affordable markets in interstate locations is certainly becoming more popular. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's out of reach completely, but is making it very, very difficult for younger buyers to get in. And it's having, I think, going to have not a great social impact in the longer run, but certainly got a lot of moving parts at the moment.
Yeah, that is the real estate landscape for sure that we are currently living in. Clinton Waters is with us this morning. We'll come back. We'll talk more money and mortgages, etc. after this.
Every morning from 6 a.m. across Australia, we deliver you the latest property news, commentary and predictions from Perth to Cairns and from Melbourne to Brisbane, 7 days a week, only on the Real Estate Podcast.
Well, you know that we talk about the upper end of the home buying income surging to over $200,000. But for a whole lot of families saving for their property, it's a fantasy number. In fact, if you look at the ABC yesterday, they ran a story about the rising costs and stagnant incomes. Countless Australians who are facing stark choices between food and other essentials. Families like a mother who sacrifices meals for her son and queues up at a food bank for the very first time. And with over 900 responses to the Senate inquiry, tales of hardship paint a very bleak picture. Food Bank reports a shift in demographics with even young professionals seeking aid. And as food insecurity pervades our society, relief organisations adapt, but the crisis is persisting. Grocery bills are soaring in a landscape where basic necessities, let's face it, for many people, are luxuries. And the enduring cost of the living crisis demands, no doubt about it, urgent attention. And the question that is asked is, how can we ensure that nobody goes hungry? And maybe, just maybe, that's the biggest question facing us around Australia.
From interest rates rising, a shifting landscape, rentals running hot, clearance rates, a tight rental market, we cover it all every morning from 6 a.m. on the Real Estate Breakfast.
And it is a Real Estate Wednesday. We are speaking to Clinton Waters, who is in Melbourne this morning. And we were talking just before the break about those applicants who earn more than $200,000. How does this affect those earning less than $150,000? Because people are looking at pretty creative ways of coming up with deposits, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the deposit is the biggest barrier to entry in many regards. And we're seeing there can still be affordability of being able to buy the property that may be targeted by a first home buyer or a low deposit buyer. Having the actual, you know, punching power of putting in the, you know, the 10%, which is really the absolute bare bones minimum cash that you need, can be quite tricky. That's further being put out of reach by other obvious cost of living expense increases and compounded by that debt sensitization that the banks are applying. Banks are in the business of lending money, and they are getting a little creative themselves in changing some of the policies around that affordability, because we're in a position now where if you've got a buyer that has just scraped together that deposit, you know, being stress tested at 9% is pretty hard. There's no one singular answer in terms of like what people are doing, but an experienced mortgage broker is, you know, they've been in the trenches, they've seen every single scenario you can possibly imagine, and they can unpack these ideas and strategies for clients in terms of, you know, if they've got a lower deposit, you know, what options there are, you know, what government incentives that there are in terms of the various state and federal schemes that are available to help get those buyers, you know, onto the ladder and, you know, into ownership, whether it be for owner-occupied purposes or for investment purposes.
Yeah, and we've talked on this program about house sharing, like going in with somebody else, might be a sister, a brother, a friend, and you're sharing the cost of that mortgage. Is that something that in the last 12 months you've seen, you've heard of happening where you are?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's seven brokers within our practice. So, you know, we see a lot of different scenarios and we discuss them amongst the team. And we are seeing an increase in the number of people that are buying together. But, you know, a word of caution in doing that is that it really requires quite a medium to long-term strategy in doing that, because it might all seem rosy now to be able to buy the property together. And the way I would sort of pitch it generally to most of our clients is it's not an option of last resort, but getting into bed together to be able to acquire a property is great now, but can create a lot of unforeseen complexities later on down the track, particularly as your financial positions change, your partnership positions change, your you know, what you want, you know, you might need access for equity in that property for other purposes, be it for an emergency or redeploying it into another property. But the other partner or friend that's involved might not want to do that. Pretty easy to getting it set up, but you really need some guardrails and put in place in writing what that exit strategy looks like and putting a time frame on it almost.
Yeah, yeah. If there's ever a time when you've got to do due diligence and you've got to look at worst case scenario, boy, this is an area I wonder 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the path for those people that have gone into this with the very best of intentions, because let's put that out there. That's what it's all about. Home ownership. Let's get into a home. Yes, we can share it with somebody else. But if that due diligence is waning, it's going to sort of come back, isn't it, in a few years' time and really bite hard.
Absolutely. And I mean, the ability of being able to rush in and acquire it and do it, it's quite available and it is easier to achieve it. You know, without pointing fingers, these are products. These are products that are pressed by the banks to lend money. And, you know, the suitability test of that requires a much more nuanced discussion around those variables that we just ran about of, is this the only way? Is this the best way of doing it? What's your exit strategy going to look like? Have you considered it? What type of agreement needs to be put in place outside of the lending agreement that's arranged by the bank? And this is where, you know, great mortgage brokers are able to, you know, have this discussion, flesh it out, and really put the options on the table rather than just pressing an individual product pitched by a bank.
And talking of getting into your own home, of course, we've got the interest rate cuts. Plenty of economists are saying, yeah, we can't see that there's going to be any more rate rises. There is only going to be cuts in 2024. But of course, we've got rhetoric coming out from the RBA. It's a cautionary one, isn't it? Just to sort of warn us, hey, something could happen. If it does, then yes, rate rises are back on the table.
You summarise it to a T, Craig. The RBA's rhetoric is going to be cautious. They'll wag the finger at consumers and the market more broadly and say, listen, guys, if you guys let spending getting out of control, we get a second rebound of inflation because delicate, you know, broader economic conditions that we face, rates could increase. My personal opinion on that is I see that it's being pretty highly unlikely. There's an opportunity, I think, in terms of fortune favours the brave. And at the moment, the next few months is going to be, I think, a reasonably good time to get into the market. And each cycle that I've seen is that when you start to then enter into a rate-cutting environment, confidence abounds. And vendors make a decision to list properties. Investors and purchasers make decisions to acquire. We've got this fundamentally broken supply side of the economy. And rightly or wrongly, it's a supply and demand metric. And if rates do come off, and depending on to what degree, I don't expect to see anything near what we saw during the pandemic in terms of the frenzy of buying. But it might be a return to that sort of 5-7% rates of growth, you know, across broader markets. It's an opportunity, I think, before things get a little bit frenzied, perhaps in the spring selling season towards the back end of this year, when those cuts come about.
All right then, Clinton, it sounds like you are pretty busy there in Melbourne. Thanks for coming on to the Real Estate Breakfast this morning and enjoy your Wednesday.
Thanks very much, Craig. Pleasure to chat.
Don't navigate the real estate market alone. Let us help guide you in the world of real estate every day. Make better informed decisions with the latest news and insights. We connect you to the best real estate information across Australia. The Real Estate Podcast.